Okay, so once again, this is Side Pocket from Radio Statler here. We have it's going to be a little bit of a time here because, you know, people have to get to places, but I'm really excited for these two guests. Don't worry about the booth falling apart. That's basically a summary of the entire con right now. I have two guests. They just finished up their talk, and this was a talk that I heard people talking about that, even though they were bitching of how early it was set, because, you know, the who wakes up at 10 a.m. at Hope? No one. But no, you guys had a great amount of people, and everyone I heard was excited for it. And as even I was walking down, people were like, "The talk on freaking booth." And I don't even think they knew that Vong existed because of you guys talking. Basically, I'm gonna get on to because right now I called this the IoT hour. It's gonna be more half an hour, spelled lowercase ID capital IoT hour, the idiot hour for IoT.
That's
and,
right.
Yep. And so if you could start introducing yourselves to the Radio Statler Alliance.
Sure. I'm Amy Stepanovich. I am the U.S. Policy Manager at Access Now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Harley Geiger. I'm Director of Public Policy at Rapid7.
Awesome. So yes, there's been a couple of discussions here. So last con, there was a lot of talks about biohacking. And this year, there was a lot of stuff being talked about IoT. And you two were one of the big ones. So what we've covered a bit of it before, but so what's your hot take on all of this insanity of why do we need sporks that somehow are Bluetooth connected?
That is most definitely not our take.
I think there are two things here. One is there's a lot of things being connected that nobody needs to be connected. But on the other side of that, there are things that I would never want to have connected, but have like legitimate reasons why other people might want to. So we've done a lot of work, for example, on internet-connected sex toys.
Yes.
And that is an area where I found that somehow victim blaming and slut shaming come together. And these devices are used for sex workers. They're used for sex rehabilitation, therapy, recovery from harassment or abuse. And so there are a lot of legitimate reasons why things that that some people would not want to be connected might be connected. So I think what our goal is not to judge the ridiculousness of some of the IoT products,
right.
Which you're right, like who needs an IoT spork?
Yeah.
But to make sure that whatever is out there has some baseline level of security attached to it.
And that's the focus of the presentation that we gave earlier here at HopeCon was on IoT security and the laws and regulations that are in place and that are also being considered to address the problem of unsecure IoT, which is increasingly recognized as a really big problem, not just for individual users, but even the critical infrastructure and the basic network of the internet itself, as demonstrated via the Mirai botnet. I mean, it is a problem that has implications both large and small.
Okay, we actually have a quick question from IRC here, and I don't know if I should ask it or if you guys want to ask it. Someone's actually asking, what is sex rehabilitation?
So it could be I was raped, and I don't trust, I'm not going to have sexual relationships with people anymore, or I have PTSD coming out of that, and you have to go through rehabilitation to overcome that. And I'm not by any means a therapist of any sort. But from the people we've spoken to, these devices can be a tool in that process.
Now, I'll say that our presentation did touch upon sex toys, but we were talking about IoT as a more general matter.
Yes.
But Amy, I mean, you know, this conversation has gone in this direction, but it is a very good point. I mean, there are a lot of products out there, connected products, sex toys being one of them, that has a low level of security, and that for one reason or another, there is not a great deal of attention being paid to building in that security by regulators or by users. Sex toys and other implements that, you know, touch on sensitive areas of our personal life is a particular problem because the regulation there is spotty, and users may feel embarrassed to actually try to push for a baseline level of security. But the harms can be very real.
Yes, and I just, first of all, I thank you for explaining that. I totally get that now. And second of all, at 10 p.m. today, I'm going to actually be talking with a bunch of sex workers and sex hackers. So if you want to know all that subject, save that for 10 p.m. But going back to the general IoT subject, yeah, one of the things that we're constantly talking about is that, as you said, which I think is important, that I think people have the misconception that with IoT that, like, we just don't want anything connected to what at whatsoever. And I mean, some things we kind of feel like that, but I think it's more of one, we just have more and more devices in general that lack options for things on the end user to know what they want to allow and not to allow. And two is that it's not even that there's poor security. A lot of times it's there's no security, that just to just get a product out there and just put it out there and like not think about it and do the low overhead that they just will, for example, release like baby monitors and you can just easily splice in and watch someone else's kid and that's a reality now.
I think there's this concept of notice and choice. Mm-hmm. The company wants to tell you what they're collecting, even though they don't always tell you everything.
Mm.
And then by using the product, you choose to opt into that collection.
Yeah.
But there's no sort of nuance. There's no, let me use the bare minimum mm-hmm. or provide the bare minimum information needed to use the product.
Yeah.
But I don't need these extra services, mm-hmm. so I don't want you to collect that information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big issues is it shouldn't be all or nothing.
Yeah.
And that's true in the security space. It's true in the privacy mm-hmm. space. You should be able to interact with companies, interact with mm-hmm. products mm-hmm. to the level you need to mm-hmm. for the service that you want. Yeah.
And do you feel that this is more of something of a manufacturing end, a lawmaker end, or is this more of just a social thing of just people being apathetic?
In the end, it has to come down to manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean all the other things that you listed there, policymaking, like lawmaking, and mm-hmm. user choice, user demand, all feed into the same end goal, which is having the device made with a baseline level of security, and that mm-hmm. requires manufacturer action mm-hmm. in almost every circumstance. And getting manufacturers to do this voluntarily, particularly for low-end products, has proven difficult so far. For higher-end products, like stuff that is more expensive, we will see. I think security. We are seeing security built into those with greater nuance. A connected car has an update capability mm-hmm. mechanism, right? But things that are on the lower end, like a light bulb, there's a low profit margin, and actually building in a security capability, maintaining that capability is expensive, and so there is less incentive for manufacturers to do that. And the way that lawmakers are looking at this now, they're looking at it from a variety of different angles. Some of this is voluntary, some of it is not. For the most part, the stuff that's not voluntary really relates to physical safety as when it comes to IoT, and then personal information, but a very kind of anachronistic definition of personal information is really just to protect against mm-hmm. identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't cover all of the personal information that a device could pick up about you, and it doesn't cover sort of data security for its own sake unless it has an impact on physical safety. So just to bring up the example of Mirai again, if Mirai is attacking core internet infrastructure, that is not necessarily a physical safety issue. It's
right.
one that got everybody's attention,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily one that is covered by existing regulations.
And then I have a health field background. I also had to take care of a mother for a while who had major health problems. And one of the scariest things that you find out about the tech health industry is that they have this like invisible policy that they will not go in and fix something until basically it causes someone to expire or die, essentially. And that's one of the scary realities of this sort of like waiting till it reaches its critical point before anyone does anything about this.
Well, and when things are, so there's a now famous example of a pacemaker that was able to be hacked into and elicit shocks
mm-hmm.
To the person that had it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that people who had that installed, even though there was thankfully an update available,
mm-hmm.
if that update hadn't been available,
yeah.
if they decided not to update those devices,
mm-hmm.
people with those devices
mm-hmm.
would either have to go through surgery, like invasive
right.
surgery again, or live with the consequence that they might have shocks
yeah.
elicited to their body at any given point in time. And that's not a good option,
yeah.
especially in the U.S. where our healthcare system
mm-hmm.
is so bad that people end up having to pay a ton of money for these
and
procedures.
We already have medications that already have 8 million side effects. We just rather have the illness anyhow. Why we keep adding more of these things on there. Looking at the landscape of currently out there with IoT and policymaking, what does that look like? Do we have any allies, whether it's actual current laws or any like lawmakers?
Yes, we do have allies, and then we have folks that are in opposition. It's very much a conversation in transition, and we're not sure where it's going to end up. The conversation about IoT security also ends up encompassing just data security generally. And so it is a broader conversation, and that also means that it's somewhat harder of a more difficult conversation for lawmakers, because they want to craft something that offers protection beyond IoT, which is smart, but something that's not narrowly focused is sometimes more difficult to get through. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I will say that in looking at what federal agencies are doing, so not Congress, not lawmaking, it is clear that they are focused on IoT security. I mean, they have done a lot of reports and voluntary standards, and in some cases exercise their existing authorities to regulate on IoT security. So it would be unfair to say that the government is not paying attention at all. Now, where I think it is fair to say is that there has been, it's been spotty whether they're actually doing something that is mandatory for manufacturers. That is difficult, and particularly in a political environment like we have now, which is very anti-regulatory.
And a lot of the
manufacturers and businesses, what they are calling for instead is voluntary standards and voluntary frameworks, and let's get everybody together to work on a voluntary framework. And that, if that works, it'd be great. The problem is that it doesn't appear to be working, especially for, as I said, like lower-end devices, like lower-end consumer devices.
I just want to mention that one IRC person wanted to point out that another problem that he has, which is why he's hesitant of getting IoT devices, the also ridiculous concept that the services that these IoT devices provide can just disappear, and then you're stuck with a device that just flat out doesn't work.
I think the IoT is causing devices that we thought we would have for a really long time to have much shorter shelf lives. And so you look at phones now.
Yeah, everything
you used to have
a smartphone,
cell phone, and you would have it for years. Now you have a cell phone for, if you have it for a year, it's probably already out of date. And they're designed to have very short consumer lives.
Right.
We're getting to that with cars. Like when you have a internet connected car, is it going to be you now own your car for 2 years and then trade it out, or you don't own it at all because it's so closed source and you have no idea, you can't get it fixed yourself, you can't fix it yourself, you can't change anything. Just the IoT and the growth of IoT is changing the entire concept of ownership outright.
And this is one of those areas. Talking about the shelf life or the expected lifetime of support for security is a big deal. A lot of consumers, when they purchase their devices, they don't know how long it's going to get security update support, right?
Right.
So you can buy it and then find out that they've pulled their support 6 months or a year after you've purchased the device, and now you have a device sitting in your home that will have security vulnerabilities, because they all do, and you can't get a patch for it. And so one of the things that the government has looked at this, really just on a voluntary basis, but there's also consumer organizations like Consumer Reports and UL that are looking at this, but the idea of pushing manufacturers to be more transparent about what the anticipated timeline for support is, understand that manufacturers go out of business and stuff like that, but even giving the consumer the anticipated timeline of security support on a product so that they can see it prior to purchase would really advance the ball. Then it starts to allow consumers to vote with their wallets, and they can buy the device that is more secure or that will have a longer shelf life than the device that won't. But right now, that transparency is just not the norm.
I feel that transparency would go for a long way, not just for devices, but just political systems, just in all of our lives in general. It's funny because earlier we were talking about specific reference in terms of IoT devices. You're talking about how the server stops and you can't use it, or it breaks and it's unusable, of how much this has impacted our rural communities with stuff like tractors and farming equipment, where if like a fender goes out, that you either have to pay the ridiculous amount of fees and wait to send the guy out there to fix it, or if you try to tamper even with a little bit, you're just slapped with all these 8 million lawsuits on patent infringements and
Ryan Monstreet, R-I-A-N, is doing amazing work out of the University of Washington on internet-connected tractors. And I think that work is going to generalize to the entire IoT space, because specifically in that field, you're dealing with people who have always been self-sufficient, who have always been able to fix their own devices, who have never had to rely on others, and now companies are telling them, actually, we own your devices, and you can't do anything, and you shouldn't touch them. And it's it's really interesting that it's bringing a lot of bedfellows together, strange bedfellows together.
Right. And just because of the little time, because I believe 11:28 right now, so I just want to get two quick questions out of the way. First of all, because I have to ask, who came up with the title for the talk?
That was me.
I figured that. No, because like that, I remember I saw the title. I'm like, I don't care these people. I have to get them on the air. Like that's just like there's so many clever titles this year, and I'm just like, help me, my toes are attacking me. Because it's funny, but when you start thinking about it, that's an actual thing that could happen. Where my field, because I've worked in so many sectors, a lot of experience with video games. I had to tell people until white papers were written about this, where we would have like offices with really ironclad security, and when it broke in, they're like, how the hell did they get in here? Someone hooked an Xbox 360 to the Wi-Fi, and that's how they would get in. So the idea that you have a toaster, and now it's in your sprinkler system that somehow is connected to Bluetooth, we don't know why, and now we have a 911 call for no reason. That can be an actual reality. It's kind of freaky.
Or like my toaster is bringing down the internet.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. All the bot zombie botnets and miners. And
like my toaster is attacking Spain.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think our toasters are going to be really key pieces of equipment in our, like, they're going to become so much more important in the next 10 years.
Yeah. We're going to have it all on a power strip so you can just unplug it every time that you're
and
not using it.
So my last thing, because I know you're kind of strapped for time, it's 11:30 right now, it's just real quick. Have you been to Hope before? Is this your first Hope?
This is my second.
Your second Hope.
This is my first.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, this is interesting. Because this is going to sound stereotypical. A lot of times when I enter the gender dynamic, it's normally the other way around. So it's nice to see, you know, quality. I like this. Yes, so you were also here last year. I wish I had you on the radio last year. But basically, whether it's your first year or your second year, you were here Friday?
For a little bit, yeah.
Yes. When you were looking at the con and stuff, like, what excites you about a con like this? Like, what do you get out of it? Like, what are you excited for seeing and, like, the Circle of Hope and conventions like these?
I mean, the topics are so interesting. For me, I go to a lot of tech hacker cons, and seeing the confluence of tech with more policy side talks, where you can talk about both sides, becomes so important, because I think they're increasingly interacting and you can't talk about either one in a bubble.
Yes.
And I think they both fail when they don't talk to each other. And so having a conference like Hope where they come together is really a great thing from my perspective.
That's kind of like a theme that we've had going on. My quick thing that I've always talked about is there was this really bad period of time, particularly between 2006 and 2014, where we would have why can't we just talk about the, you know, freaking coding languages, and why can't it be political? And I'm like, dude, you're standing there with an EFF t-shirt and a free Gary McKinnon hat in front of the White House. Like, somehow this is not political, that what you're doing right now. You know, you are totally a coder and it's nothing to do with politics. Like, what's wrong? Especially with the proliferation of devices and our media, and that all of this directly web impacts our lives, like everything's connected now. So it's everything's a butterfly effect. So it's like, as you said, you can't do one without the other one happening. And I think that's an important realization that I think more and more people are going to come to. Do you have a comment for
me? I mean, the thing that excites me the most is just getting out and talking with a different community than I normally run into in Washington, D.C. I mean, so I'm based in D.C., and I mean, there are a lot of people there that are extremely well versed in policy, and you know, but then it is also very easy to just kind of live in this bubble and not have as many opportunities to talk with, interact with, educate, and learn from a group of people that is outside of that bubble. So, you know, the opportunity to be in a place with security practitioners and folks that are on the ground working on these issues, on security, is always very, very interesting for me. That's the thing that excites me the most.
And that's why I hope we really fight for those, because we benefit from that too. We actually get a lot of comments of like, why are we inviting a bunch of IoT people? Why are we inviting sex workers? Why are we inviting construction workers? And it's like, we're all interconnected in this, and if we can, you know, if they can come out of their comfort zone because we're in a state of crisis, we should be able to do that ourselves. Quick follow-up on that, if someone did want to get involved with trying to get more consumer rights for their IoT devices, where could you point them, especially if they're in the United States?
if they're trying to get more consumer rights, I guess it depends on how much effort they want to put into it.
Okay.
But they a lot of times government agencies do have comments mm-hmm. open. Anybody can respond to those. Mm-hmm. There are consumer reports. You know, if you're technically inclined, Consumer Reports has a digital standard like we're aiming at transparency for consumers that the community can get involved with. If you're a security researcher, then you can bring IoT vulnerabilities to the manufacturers. You know, under certain conditions, it is entirely legal, as long as you are not violating something like the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and it's like a device that you own.
It's funny because yesterday we actually had an entire thing about that. So yes.
Yeah, but then also, I would say, you know, support and interact with. Consumer organizations whose full-time job it is to try to fight for your rights, like Access Now.
We have a newsletter. It's called the Access Now Express. You can sign up on our website. Woo-hoo. But plus one to everything Harley said.
I can't remember if I'm actually on there, so I'm literally going to do that today.
Awesome.
As soon as I get a break of that, I'm going to look
Thanks.
That up and do that. And just very last thing, what if anyone wants to continue this sort of dialogue with either of you, how can they reach out and see what you've done and continue on this conversation?
At A. Stepanovich, which is the longest last name ever, I apologize, on Twitter.
It's fine. My mom's maiden name is Tchaikovsky, so I completely understand.
My mom's maiden name is Brenichea.
Yeah.
But
I like this club.
But don't reach out to my mom. Reach out to me. It is at Harley Geiger. Harley spelled like the motorcycle. Yeah. Geiger spelled like the Geiger counter. These are not nicknames. It's a blessing and a curse.
Because
Harley
we're
Geiger.
Big about consent here. Would it be okay if they did want to reach out to your mom? Like if they wanted to send like a Your Mom is Awesome card, they send that to you?
Send
and
it
then
directly
you can
to me.
To
it'll freak her out.
Yeah. We get questions like this. I'm just covering all our bases here.
My mom is awesome.
Well, congratulations for an amazing talk. Thank you for bringing this type of content to Hope and to our community. Keep pushing for that. Sometimes we get a bunch of lame people who don't want it, but this is the type of stuff that we need in this world because we're all in this together. And good luck with your flight, sir, and congratulations on your talk, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Man, he just served me.
Hey,
thanks a lot for having me, and I love you, Mom.
I hope to see you guys next con. Oh. That's fine. That's close enough. That's as best I'm going to look.
Thanks a lot.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck with your flight.